It was at the Auction Napa Valley Barrel Auction of 2008 where we first met Chris and Pauline Tilley of V Madrone Wines. They did a brief interview on that podcast, and we returned to see them in September of 2008 for a full interview at their home in St. Helena, along with tasting an excellent sampling of their 2005 vintage Cabernet Sauvignon. At the time of this interview, they had yet to open their tasting room. We are happy to say that they managed to open the tasting room long before we were able to complete the editing of this interview. Chris, where did the name V Madrone come from?
Well, V Madrone stands for V for vineyard, and Madrone is a tree here in California. And the pre-prohibition winery that we have is an old resort as well in the 1930s and 40s called the Madrones. So we wanted to pick something that associated the winery with the old resort, so we picked V Madrone. Plus, we liked the way it looked on a label.
Tell me about the pre-prohibition winery.
Prohibition eliminated the sale of alcoholic beverages in this country. And pre-prohibition winery means that it was formed prior to prohibition. So in this case, our winery was formed in the 1880s by a fellow by the name of August Hirsch. He made a good deal of wine here along or about the same time as the other German immigrants that came in, like Krug and so forth. He prospered for a while, and then he died prematurely, and he left behind a widow with 10 children, and they were unable to continue to operate the property, and it was sold in the 1890s and kind of lost to history after that. We did not know that it was a pre-prohibition winery when we bought the property, and we had both good and bad news when we discovered after we owned it that it was a winery in the 1880s. The good news was that it was a winery, and it was a wonderful opportunity for us to recreate it. The bad news is we lost our house.
Okay, explain that to our listeners.
Well, when you buy a residence that then becomes a winery, it becomes a commercial use. You can't use it as a residence anymore. So this beautiful 3,500 square foot 1880s Italian Victorian farmhouse that was going to be our house could no longer be that, but a very, very large tasting room and winery underneath, which is the good news too.
So what was the name of the original winery?
It was called August Hirsch Winery. And he was a fellow of a German extract from Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, home of Life Between the Vines. So you purchased the property when?
In 2001.
Were grapes being grown at that time?
No, grapes hadn't been grown on the property for at least 30 to 50 years. At some point in time, it was a walnut orchard, say 20 years or so ago, but grapes hadn't been grown here in an awfully long time. And so the land was fallow. And when we planted the vineyard in 2002, the vines just simply took off. They just prospered. And so we actually released our first wine, our first Cabernet Sauvignon in 2004, and produced enough wine to make it interesting. But you probably would have produced some in 2003 of some quantity. We produced a little bit more than a ton, which was enough for about 70 cases.
Do you have any of that left?
It's sold out except for some that we're keeping back in library.
What vintage are we tasting right now?
This is a 2005. And again, remember that the land was fallow. In 2005, the grapes, again, just really prospered. It was a very, very good year in 2005 with a very long, hot summer extending into fall. And we produced 562 cases. But keep in mind that, you know, these grapes are 4 years old at that point in time. They've had a chance to reach deeper into the soil by about another foot. And so there was a lot more of the typical big, bold Cabernet style in these four-year-old grapes in which you taste in this very big Napa Valley Cabernet.
So what other wines are you making?
Well, we're making right now three other varietals, a Petite Syrah, a Old Vine Zinfandel, and a Chardonnay.
And what were those vintages?
The first vintage was 2005 Petite Syrah, because when we open up the winery, again, after years of renovation, you know, this October. In fact, we expect to open up mid-October. We'll have two varietals. We'll, of course, have our estate Cabernet grown from the vineyard that surrounds us, as well as a Petite Syrah that we have acquired long-term grapes under contract, that is for. And we'll be releasing in the future a 2007 Petit Sirah and a 2007 Chardonnay and a 2007 Old Vine Zinfandel.
Are you strictly selling through the wine club?
Right now, we're selling direct by internet. And of course, when we open up the winery, we'll be selling out of the winery. We have some distribution in certain states. For example, we have a very strong distributor in New York, and we're also distributing in Nebraska and just recently Florida, Oklahoma, perhaps one or two other states. But that's about it at this point in time of our production. We distribute ourselves to restaurants in California. And we're in quite a few very, very nice restaurants, both here in Napa Valley and the Bay Area, as well as in Manhattan.
How do you see your future with restaurants?
We're always going to be loyal to those people that helped us. So those restaurants that have carried our wine, you know, they're always going to be able to carry our wine. Those distributors that have helped us, in helping means giving you advice and suggestions about who to talk to or how to present your wine or other sorts of business advice. Those are long-term business relationships and partnerships, and those people will always be part of our V. Madrone family. And, you know, as long as they want our wine, we'll give them some wine. At the same time, we only have so much wine that is produced out of this vineyard, and so we'll have limitations. You know, our expectation is that our wine will go the allocation route for that portion that we're allocating to consumers. That's, you know, our goal. We clearly want to spread it out as much as possible to, you know, get the name out and let everybody enjoy it that possibly can, where we can legally sell it, of course.
So are you the winemaker?
No, I'm not. Our winemaker is Chris Dearden, who has been making wine in Napa Valley for probably 15 years. Before that, he was a cooper, and he still practices that art. In fact, he is an expert in oak barrels from all over the world. And that's also what you taste in the wine that you're drinking today, that craftsmanship in terms of the selection of barrels, not just that they're French barrels or American oak barrels to some small percent, but that they're from certain types of climates where, for example, there's 12% American oak in what you're drinking, but it's from northern Minnesota where the grain is tighter, and so you get some very subtle flavors. That's part of his craft. The 88% is French oak, two-thirds of that is new, and one-third is 1 year old. So it's not too overly tannic by having too much new oak, which is our personal preference, and we think preference of a lot of consumers and sommeliers. And so it's a balancing act, and that's what he does.
How much input do the two of you have?
We used to have a lot of input. We used to say that here's what we want you to make, here's what we like, and our original goal was to make wine that we enjoyed. It was as simple as that. And so we told him what our objectives were, what we liked, what we didn't like. For example, we wanted to make a big Napa Valley Cabernet that wouldn't overpower a meal, would complement a very nice and large Midwestern steak, wouldn't be what they call a fruit bomb, something that was balanced and could be enjoyed with the meal and not necessarily after the meal or before the meal, but with the meal. We were so thrilled with the first product that we said to Chris that the 2004, for example, we were just so happy with him that, you know, you didn't need to do any better. And he said, I can always do better. And so we didn't quite understand what that meant, but with the 2005 and more production, he now had 30 barrels to work with. And so he practiced his craft, and out came this very remarkable 2005 Cabernet, which has a lot of wonderful, subtle flavors to it, and nice balance and nice acid. And we said, we can't be any happier. We're going to stop telling you what to do and just do your best. Always just make the best possible Cabernet you can. And that's where we are today.
So tell me, how do you feel about screw caps?
I don't like them at all. Wine is a romantic part of a meal. And there is a formality. There is the romance of opening a bottle of wine by removing the cork and examining the cork. And that's just part of the whole experience. And that's what it should be.
And we're also aware that with a cork, you run the risk of losing some wine because it can be corked. And with screw caps, the argument is you don't. but we do believe in that romance of the wine. And the other thing also is that the cork is also environmentally friendly. And that's another aspect, because we're going organic in our vineyard, and we're very much into trying to do sustainable farming here.
Our Cabernet is a wine that's made from romance. We were married at Auberge du Soleil. And the next day, we went out and we bought the property right on our honeymoon. And for us, the Cabernet that we've made, it should be something that's enjoyed at a romantic dinner and candlelight at a wonderful restaurant. It's a wine that you're going to remember forever because it's a romantic dinner. And so for us, of course, it has to have all those classic ingredients of a fine wine.
Do you have any thoughts on alcohol content?
Our personal preference is that we don't like excessive alcohol in our wine. We think it overpowers the bouquet of Cabernet. So we really try to manage that process by telling Chris what our likes and dislikes are. However, he's already there and he's never departed from that. So it's something we're clearly on board with.
You had told me something about the ghost winery.
Yes, we have here what is called a ghost winery, and a ghost winery is usually regarded here as a pre-prohibition winery because it was shuttered and now it's left to the ghosts. In this case, we actually have people who've told us that we have ghosts. The first time we heard about it was when we bought the winery in 2001, when of course we knew it as a house and not a winery. And the owners at the very last minute gave us one additional disclosure in writing. And when you're buying a house and you get that last disclosure at the last minute, you become very, very worried. And when we read it, and the owners at that time basically said that there were two ghosts living in the house, and they were a couple, but that they were friendly, but they felt that they had to disclose it to us because we were buying the property. We just sort of looked at each other and said, okay, this is what it is, and just moved on, not really giving any credence to the whole story, and really pretty much forgot about it until last year. And then last year we heard from one of the tenants that one of the tenants in the main house, which is the winery, is we have cottages with other tenants on the property, and one of the cottage tenants said that one of the tenants in the main house had experienced something a couple years ago, and that a new tenant moved in and she hadn't heard anything from this new tenant, but the current tenant had also experienced something as well. And what they apparently experienced was the same thing, and that is a tapping, drawers opening, and also the appearance of a cane. We just sort of went, that's interesting. Did anybody, you know, leave behind the cane? And of course, you know, we didn't, you know, couldn't find it or any evidence of it. Then a new tenant moved in, and we've learned that there might be something else going on there in terms of noises and drawers opening and so forth. We actually haven't lived in the house, or I've stayed in there one night. But other than that, we haven't experienced anything, except that people seem to feel very comfortable. I mean, both tenants apparently told our other tenant that they didn't feel afraid or anything. They just accepted it for what it was. And then, of course, we went and we talked with the son of the prior owner after this had happened, just to ask him. And he's sort of a salt of the earth guy, and we figured we'd get the straight scoop from him. And so we asked him whether there was any truth to it or not. He says, absolutely. There were always funny things going on with the doors opening and the drawers and the noises of the night and so forth.
Chris and Pauline, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Our pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You can find out more about Vimadrone Wines at vimadrone.com.